Reader's Entertainment Radio, where variety is the spice of life.
Well, hello and welcome to Reader's Entertainment Radio. I'm your host, Sheila English. It's the new year, and I'm hoping to master Mondays this year. That's my 2013 wish, master Mondays. And, you know, do not get more dogs. For those of you who are keeping count, I'm up to 5 dogs now. And I also want to be more aware of the things that I should be grateful for. So, you know, I don't think that's asking too much. I think that's something I could probably pull off. I'm not going to call it a New Year's resolution because I hate that. I think it just sets me up to wait till I can't, I can't fulfill it. I'm just going to say this is my wish. This is what I'm hoping for. And we'll reassess the end of the year. You know, I'm also hoping 2013 will be, you know, the year this show, you know, brings in more best-selling authors and breakthrough authors. You know, I'd love to bring in authors that, you know, encourage you to participate in the show. You know, if you have some requests, please, you know, let me know. In the meantime, I'm starting out the year with an author you're going to enjoy. If you love thrillers, this is the name I'm going to tell you to check out this month, okay? It's J.E. Fishman, and he's a writer of thrillers and mysteries. And I knew I wanted to read his books the second I read his about page on his website. I read literally hundreds of about pages, you know, as I write articles and do the radio interviews and, you know, look for connections with authors that I hope to enjoy. But this one about page made me immediately like this author. You know, you've got to just take a moment out of your day and go to, it's jefishman.com, so it's jefishman.com, and read the about page. So you can email me or leave a comment. Tell me how right I am, because, you know, as my husband already knows, I love to hear that. So, you know, Fishman currently has out a book entitled The Dark Pool, and here to talk about it is our guest, J.E. Fishman. Welcome, Joel.
Thanks for having me, Sheila, and for the record, I just got my third dog, so I'm catching up.
Oh, you have 3. I love it. What kind are they?
2 Frenchies and a rescue dog.
Oh, you know, all of my dogs are rescue dogs. I just have...
That's great.
I have that, just something about rescue dogs, but I think I'm going to have to be rescued here pretty soon if I get another one. So I've got to behave and stick with the 5 that I have. Now, before we get too far, I'd like to invite our listeners to join us. We have the live chat session open. I do see some people have already signed up for that. And you can also call in if you'd like to chat with us. It's 646-200-4071. After the show, you can download the podcast or, you know, come on over to readersentertainment.com and check out the blog that's going to accompany the podcast. I'll make sure that we get you some links up so that you can find the author's website very easily. You know, I'd like to start, you know, right away talking about The Dark Pool, and then we can go into, you know, some of your other works, and I'd like to talk a little bit more about you. But can you give us kind of the synopsis of The Dark Pool first? Tell us a little bit about the story.
Sure. Well, people who trade financial instruments use a thing called the Bloomberg Terminal, which is a computer set that sits on their desk, and it has full of information, and they can trade off of it. If there's a tagline for this book, it's this. What if someone could press a button on their Bloomberg terminal and you'd end up dead? There are 3 main characters in the book. The first is a hedge fund manager in Greenwich, Connecticut, who calls himself the Mean. He's made a big bet that's in danger of going bad. The others are a high school football coach named Shug Clay and his star player Antoine Meeps. Shug's under pressure to move up to the college level, but he doesn't want to because for him it's all about the kids. Meanwhile, Antoine got into some serious trouble over Christmas vacation, but someone mysteriously cleared it up. Now something's happened in the school gymnasium that will rock these guys' worlds. Crazy things are happening around them, people getting killed or nearly killed. And it turns out that some Wall Street types have placed bets on Shug in a so-called dark pool. So they're manipulating his life in order to protect their investments. Shug and Antoine have to get to the bottom of it before their lives are ruined, and that's the main thrust of the plot.
Now, talk a little bit about the plausibility of the story.
Yeah, well, I actually lived in the Hudson Valley in New York for two decades, and a lot of financial Wall Street types live up that way. So some of them were friends, acquaintances of mine, people I sometimes would see on the train when I used to commute to New York. So lately, with the events that have affected so many people in recent years, I was looking for a way to dramatize the fact that financial players so often make these decisions in an office somewhere detached from most people's reality. They make a trade, and to them it's just the press of a button. You know, they're trying to make money, but they don't think about the consequences other than whether they make money or lose money. But in reality, sometimes at least, somewhere else, someone's life could be ruined. People, in the sort of more quotidian things, people are laid off or, you know, that kind of thing. But in the novel, what I've posited is that there's a dark pool marketplace, and dark pools are very real. They're these unregulated trading mechanisms. And they account of late for about 15% of all stock trades, billions upon billions of dollars unregulated being traded in secret. So in the novel, the dark pool players are betting on Q scores, which is another real thing. It's a measure of a famous person's marketability. It's an old Madison Avenue measure. It's been around for many decades. What I do when I write a novel is, I'll, to the degree there's anything technical in it, I'll run it by somebody who has knowledge of the real-life subject. And it so happens that one of my oldest friends is a hedge fund manager, manages about $9 billion, and I had him read this novel. And he reported back to me that he racked his brains looking for a reason why these events wouldn't happen in real life, and he couldn't think of one.
Oh,
so,
wow.
I think that answers that. It answers the question that it's plausible.
Wow. Now, is this more mystery or more thriller?
Well, you know, there's a lot of bleed over these days from mystery to thriller and thriller to mystery. I guess I'd describe it as a thriller with a mystery element to it. In order to save themselves, these guys have to get to the bottom of what's happening, and at first it's all quite hidden from them. But they're in danger most of the time in the book, and the reader has a sense of who the villain is, even though the reader or the villains are, even though the reader doesn't know, with certainty at first. So to that extent, it's a thriller. I fundamentally characterize it as a thriller.
Okay. Now I know the book, it's not out just yet, but can you talk a little bit about what feedback you have gotten on it so far, or any reviews, anything like that?
Yeah, there haven't been any reviews, but what I do with each of my books is I'll send them to somewhere between 8 and 12 of what I call lay readers, meaning people who are not book publishing experts or not even my editor yet. Before I send it to my editor, I'll try to get the perspective from lay readers and see what kinds of things people catch. So it's correct that the book will be out in a few days in ebook. It'll be out in paperback next month. But what I heard back from the dozen or so lay readers was that they found Shug to be a very likable character and very sympathetic. They also liked that the book is different from most financial thrillers in that the hero is not a financial type. He's a regular guy. And a lot of financial thrillers, the hero is somehow a finance guy. Even if he's a small player, he's somehow, immersed in that world. In this case, that world is reaching out from its confines to sort of a man on the street, and people like that aspect of it a lot. And people always tell me that they feel my novels really pay off in the end. There's always a big climactic scene, and I tend to get a lot of comments about that climactic scene. That didn't fail to happen for this novel.
Fantastic. So now it'll be out. Can you tell us again when it comes out in ebook form?
Ebook form by the middle of January. It should be out in ebook and by the end of February in paperback on Amazon.
Perfect. Now, you know, there are literally thousands of books out there, you know, hundreds, perhaps thousands of thrillers that are out there. What makes The Dark Pool the book to read? You know, I realize everything is subjective, you know, but our listeners are busy and they want to know, you know, the book they choose to invest their time in is going to really pay off. And, you know, what can you tell them about The Dark Pool that you feel makes this book the one?
Well, first of all, Sheila, of course, the fact that you put me on your show is instant credibility. I lived among, as I mentioned a moment ago, I lived among these Wall Street people for 20 years. I think that there's a lot of, people who haven't, who don't know any of these people, haven't met any of these folks, wonder sort of what motivates them. So this really gives you a glimpse into the human element of the finance world, how they think. Secondly, you know, it's a page turner, and it's a page turner with a big theme. So I think it's a very compelling, very emotional way, you know, into the big, you know, financial world, into the financial mess that to some degree we're just climbing out of now. It's a world where Wall Street has all this power, but there's a tendency for these guys to act, you know, whether it's intentionally or inadvertently, sort of like a bull in a china shop. And in this novel, the mean and his friends are the bull, and Suge and Antoine are the china, you know, at risk of being broken. And, you know, if you're wondering how these financial guys think and how what they do leads to unintended consequences, but you want it to go down easy, then this is the book for you, because at the end of the day, you know, my main goal is to get you to keep turning the pages.
Now, let me ask you, you know, I know this is a financial thriller. Do I need to, like, know a lot about finances in order to keep up with what's going on in the book?
I don't think so. You know, it's interesting when you have a book that has technical material in it. I think the key is to do it with a very light touch. And I'm not a finance guy, so I'm sort of not living off in the weeds. Everything is explained, you know, in layman. Everything you would need to know to follow the plot is explained in layman's terms. And the key really is, you know, this guy, the hero of this book is, you know, he's a football coach. He's not an unintelligent guy. He's a high school teacher, but, you know, he's not by any means an expert at this stuff. So it has to be, you discover what's going on alongside him.
Okay,
and he's got to come to understand it in order to prevail. So I think it's pretty straightforward.
See, I like that because it also gives you a glimpse into a world that, you know, you're not necessarily a part of. And, you know, you see a lot of people do that with, you know, with cop thrillers and medical thrillers. You know, it's like you don't need to have all that jargon, but you get just enough to feel that the realness of it, and you can understand it. But, yeah, it's like a glimpse into that world. And I like that because there really aren't a lot of what I would call financial thrillers out there that I see. And I think this will be very interesting to check that out. Now, this is, I want to come back and talk about some of your other books, but now this is a standalone book. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, because I was looking at your website, which that's a fantastic website. I love the website. And, it's pretty easy to see what you have here. As a matter of fact, I just brought it up. We were talking. And so you have your standalone thrillers, and then, you know, I want to talk a little bit about your other books. You know, the Dark Pool is a standalone thriller, but you have a couple of series coming up. Can you tell us about those?
Sure. Well, I've been very coy about a series that I'm almost will certainly be launching this year. On the website, I describe it as an explosive new series. We don't have book covers yet for it, but I may as well break some news and tell you what it is. It's called Bomb Squad NYC, and it's a series of police procedural thrillers about the NYPD Bomb Squad, which consists of three dozen people who, in real life, consists of three dozen people who have to keep the entire city of New York safe from bombs. You're talking about three dozen people who go out on 1,500 calls a year. In real life, many of those are not very interesting, but, you know, the novelist is interested in the 1% of the really, you know, the really exciting stuff. And the really cool thing about that series, besides the fact that I hope it's going to involve some wonderful storytelling and some great characters, is I have two technical consultants on it. One is actually the top FBI bomb technician in the country, and the other is the actual active commander of the NYPD bomb squad.
Wow! Now, can I ask how you manage that? Because that's big. Not just anybody can pull something like that off.
Well, it's true, and they're working exclusively with me. The short answer is I pulled it off. I happen to have one of my closest friends. Holds the Congressional Medal of Honor. He was, in fact, president of the Congressional Medal of Honor Society, based upon some of his actions in the Vietnam War. And he does a lot of speaking engagements. And I happened to be telling him that I had this idea. I have an apartment in New York, and it's only a couple of blocks away from the real NYPD Bomb Squad headquarters. So I walk by there all the time, and I said, "Gee, nobody's done a series." All the police procedural thrillers out there in the world, and many of them about New York, and nobody's done a series about the bomb squad. And he said, "Gosh, I just spoke to an association of bomb squad technicians 2 weeks ago, and I got a couple of names, and why don't I put you in touch with them?" And so, you know, I started having conversations with these guys, and they realized that, you know, I was for real, and that it was really, you know, in the interest of their craft, you know, to have it be as technically accurate and authentic as possible without, you know, revealing anything that would endanger anybody. So they you know, jumped in with both feet. It's really cool.
I think that's amazing. Really interested. Now, I love thrillers anyhow. And I'm thinking in my mind what you're talking. Saying, no, I don't. You know, you have those occasional, you know, the bombs, you know, that going off in different books, you know. But it's not the bomb squad. I've never even thought about that point of view of somebody who actually is a part of the bomb squad. So that's
going to be. Yeah, these guys also the I'm sorry for interrupting you there. These guys also, you know, it's sort of an ensemble cast kind of, you know, approach. And you know, what interests me is these are real, you know, real life heroes. These are the guys who run in the direction of the bomb when everybody else is running away from it. But yet, then they've got to go home to their wives and their girlfriends. And you know, right now they're all men. That's why I say wives and girlfriends and not husbands. But you know, and they've got to, you know, still, you know, take out the trash and, you know, deal with relationships just like anybody else. And so I hope to really capture the full spectrum of their experience.
Yeah, and it immediately just causes all sorts of questions. And I guess that's what you want when you're starting a new series is,
exactly.
You know, you give a little taste of it and the readers say, yeah, but how could that happen or how does that work? And, you know, that's how you pique their interest because I'm thinking, I mean, is there a bomb squad school? Like, how do you train for that? There's just so many, you know, how do they work with the other, you know, with other cops? And, you know, who do they actually answer to? Is it the city? Is it the county? Is it the federal government? Because that seems like it's kind of could tie in with terrorism. I'm just thinking.
It does, yeah.
How can I get Joel to come back and talk about
these? Well, hopefully later in the year. But, you know, the one other thing I'll say about it is it does the first thing that springs to mind is terrorism, and those guys are members of what's called the Joint Terrorism Task Force. But, you know, the majority of real-life bombs are not terrorist-related, any way that you might commit a violent crime, or rather, any motive you might have to commit a violent crime, you might choose, to use explosives. Their cases run the gamut. They certainly do touch upon terrorism, and some of the books will, but, there's blackmail, there's revenge, there's extortion. Any motive that you can imagine. At some point, in the history of New York, somebody has, planted a bomb to try to advance their nefarious goals.
Right. Well, and you think about how information can be shared now. I mean, you can go online and look up, how to create a bomb, that kind of thing. It's like, really, it could be any kind of reason somebody could come up with, and then I wonder about what different kinds of bombs. So this is,
I think
this is really an exciting series, and I truly hope you'll, give us a call and let us know when this comes out, because I would love to be able to talk to you more about that. But now
sounds great. Now you're going to say this other series.
Yeah. Yeah, the other series looks like it might have a little bit more of a fun feel to it, or a comedy feel, but maybe that's just because I look at the name of Cadaver Blues and it just makes me kind of chuckle.
No, that's right.
Yeah, tell me about it.
First of all, I'm glad that you respond at a glance to the cover image in that way, because indeed it does have a humorous element to it. I launched the first book last fall. The first book was called Cadaver Blues. The series, I call them Fook Goldberg fiascos. Fook Goldberg is the hero, Phuoc, and I call them Fook Goldberg fiascos, and it's another way of sort of tipping my hand a little bit that these are not your conventional mysteries, but they are mysteries. They're comic, somewhat. They're what I would call, what I like to call, ironic noir. I kind of feel like, although there are plenty of people who are still writing noirish mysteries, and they're certainly valid and they can be compelling. But it just seems to me that the category has been around for so long that somebody needs to do it with sort of a sense of self-consciousness, in a way. And so that's what this is. It's riffing off of those things a little bit, departing from them a little bit, not taking itself too seriously. Fu is a debt workout specialist who becomes an accidental detective. He doesn't even own a gun when the first book opens. He's got an office outside Wilmington, Delaware. The books are set in the Brandywine Valley, where I live most of the time, in Wilmington and New York. I'm sorry, Wilmington, Delaware, and Pennsylvania. And the unusual name comes from the fact that he was he's ethnically Vietnamese, but he was adopted as an infant by Jewish socialists. So
I love it.
So he's got this. So he's really conflicted, because people walk into his office and they expect him to have an accent, and he's as red-blooded American as anybody. So that ticks him off. And I think all good detective series heroes are fundamentally are outsiders, and so this is a guy who's sort of uncomfortable with the prejudices that are directed against him. Now, the irony, of course, is that he's got his own prejudices, as everybody does. And if there's a theme to the first book, it's sort of about those prejudices and how he sort of gets his in the end. But he starts out being very judgmental, even though he claims to be sensitive to those things. But eventually, it all comes around to him, and I think it's a lot of fun. Those books are rolling out a little bit more slowly than the Bomb Squad books will, in fact. The next book in that series will be called Ruby Red Dead.
Yeah, I saw that. I thought, well, Cadaver Blues, Ruby Red Dead. I see a theme here.
Yes.
very colorful, so.
Yep.
No, I love that. These are really, really different. So how do you prepare for such different, one of them's kind of tongue-in-cheek, noirish, and then you have, you know, the police thriller, which sounds like it's going to be more fast-paced, heavy-hitting thriller. I mean,
yes.
Is it easy to go back and forth between the two?
I don't know if it's easy. I'm not sure, quite honestly, as a commercial proposition, you know, it may be at first a little confusing to my fans, in that, you know, just when you get used to Fu Goldberg, then I'm off on, you know, Shug Clay, and, you know, then just when you get used to Shug Clay or your standalone thrillers, I'm off on the Bomb Squad. But I think that over time people will begin to see a certain sensibility. But there's no question that they're very different. They're very different novels, and you know, I don't know whether it's easy or hard. I'm not sure I can answer, but it's just what I feel called to, you know, to do. The one thing they really all have in common is they all do have the Fu Goldbergs are more mystery than thriller, but they have a little bit of a thriller element to them. The other ones are all thrillers, you know, they're all intending to be entertainment. They're all intending to be page turners, and the Fu Goldberg are the only ones that are written in the first person. The other ones, so far at least, have been written, you know, all in the third person. So they are quite a different feel, and hopefully there's room for all of them.
Well, you know, I read. So much, and I have, you know, like everyone else, I have my favorite authors, and you know, I find that if the author's voice, you know, the way that they write, if I'm attracted to that as a reader, I will follow them no matter what they write. You know, Christine Fian is a dear friend of mine, Lisa Kleypas, and they write very different series. And, you know, I always tell them it's like cleansing the palate. I'll go along this series for so long, it's like, okay, I need a breath, and I'll read this, and then I go back, you know. So I think, I mean, it's almost like there's something for everyone, and you know, you get to take a break, try something a little different, and then go back to whichever your favorite series is. So I think this is very interesting that you have, you know, you have some options for people. So I think it's great.
Now, oh, good. Thank you.
You mentioned Brandywine Valley. You know, what's it like there, and how do you use that in your books?
Well, if I had the few sort of highlights of the Brandywine Valley, which is essentially a suburb of Philadelphia, although it's closer to Wilmington, Delaware. Wilmington, Delaware, in some ways, is not big enough to have its own suburbs. But the Brandywine Valley is where the DuPont Company was founded and still has its headquarters. It has a famous museum called Winitor, which is a huge collection of American antique furniture. There's a botanic garden called Longwood Gardens, which is arguably the best botanic garden in the world. There's a lot of avid gardeners in this part of the world. It's the former home of the famous painter Andrew Wyeth, and many of his paintings were painted here. Commercially, besides the DuPont Company and some other companies, two-thirds of all mushrooms grown in America are grown in the Brandywine Valley. So that's a huge angle, and that's an angle that I worked into the first Fu Goldberg, because it's just irresistible. I mean, you know, these mushroom houses, you know, they're dank and dark and creepy, and every few days, a terrible smell issues from them.
I've got a minute and a half warning up here, so I do want to just talk briefly about what's the big idea, and which I love the name of your blog. Can you just let people know what they'll find over there?
Yeah, real quickly, it's a blog about my creative process. Where do I get my ideas for novels, and how do I decide or figure out how to execute them?
And then where can listeners find out more about you, about your book? I know you're on Twitter because I saw you. So where else can people find you?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn and all that good stuff. What I suggest is that people go to my website, jefishman.com, and sign up, if you would, for the email newsletter, which I don't bombard people with. It comes out about once a month, and from there you can also get to all the social networks that I'm on.
Well, definitely, we're going to have you come back. I would love to have you come back, so I'll be hitting you up again. And I just want to thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Great. Well, thank you so much for having me, Sheila.
I want to thank our listeners for joining us here at Readers Entertainment Radio. Don't forget, you can find us at readersentertainment.com. Stop by and leave a comment, ask a question. We'll make sure that Joel gets that. And I'm Sheila English, your host. Happy reading.